The Tom Woods Show, episode 2267.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. We all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Ezra Weirich is with me today. He is a lad of a mere, could it really be 18 years old? How old are you again?
18.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I have kids older than you. Anyway, but file that under things old people say. Anyway, I'm glad to have you on. I'm having you on because you are 18, and let's say 10, 12 years ago, the way 18-year-olds came into our circles was they saw Ron Paul in the presidential debates, whereas you were not even remotely politically aware in 2008. So you must have had some other path, and you've been a consistent content creator. And so I kind of want to tap into, now let's file away a second thing old people say, what the young people are into these days, or what's attracting the young people. And you seem like the perfect person to do that. So let's start a little bit with your background. Are you a blogger? Like, where are you composing your opinions for the world?
I have a Substack, which I don't do very frequently. I'm mostly active on Twitter. I became active on Twitter in 2021. Right now, I'm the chief editor and executive director of Mises Magazine, which is an upcoming newsletter from the Liberty Youth Coalition. If you don't know what that is, it's a up-and-coming organization. It's committed to education, you know, mass mobilization, restoration, mutual aid, that kind of thing. It's a youth organization, kind of stemming from the misdirection at Young Americans for Liberty, which I'm sure you're aware. As for my background, I first became interested in libertarianism, believe it or not, during Ron Paul's 2012 presidential run. At the time...
how old were you? Tell me how old you were.
I would have been 8 years old.
Jeez. Okay. So fair enough, you weren't really aware in 2008, but good on you for somehow figuring things out in 2012.
Yeah. 4 was a little young, but 8 was perfect. But at the time, I didn't really, you know, understand it. So I knew it was a lot different from the very staunch conservative views I'd been raised with. And I was drawn to the idea of individual freedom and limited government, but I wasn't quite sure what that would mean in practice. And I was only 8 years old. So yeah, give me a break, right? But, you know, as the years went on, I kind of found myself becoming more and more disillusioned with the political establishment. I saw politicians, you know, on both sides of the aisle making promises that they couldn't keep and doing basically nothing to address the real issues facing the country. It wasn't really until the 2016 presidential election and subsequent rise of Donald Trump that I really began to understand the true nature of the American political establishment. I kind of saw how the establishment was willing to do anything to maintain power, even if it meant destroying the lives of ordinary people. And in 2018, I began to drift back into libertarianism. And I realized that the only way to truly change the system is to reject the status quo and embrace a new way of thinking. And I started reading more about libertarianism and began to understand the principle of voluntarism. And I saw how voluntarism, with its emphasis on individual liberty and voluntary association, was really the only way to truly create a society that was, you know, just for all. But it wasn't until the COVID lockdowns in 2020 that I truly became sort of radicalized to voluntarist thought, because I saw how the government was willing to trample on individual rights and freedoms in the name of public health, in air quotes. And I saw how the lockdowns were destroying small businesses and putting people out of work. And I realized that the state is not a force for good, but a force for oppression. And I haven't really looked back since then. Like I said, I became active on Twitter in 2021. I gained a decently significant following. And I'm now totally committed to, you know, spreading the word about voluntarism and libertarianism to as many people as possible. And I think that the only way to truly change the world is through education and mass mobilization, restoration, and mutual aid. And that's what the Liberty Youth Coalition is all about. Committed to educating the next generation, about the principles of volunteerism and working together to create a better future for all, because I think that's the least we can do for the next generation.
All right, I have a follow-up, but just very quickly, where are you based and where are you either going to or planning to go to school?
I am from East Tennessee. I live in a small town just west of Knoxville. I've lived here all my life. I was born and raised in East Tennessee. This is 100% the fatherland for me. As for education, I was actually homeschooled, so I did not get the unfortunate benefit of the indoctrination in public school. That might kind of explain my mindset.
Yes, sure. Are you planning on going to college?
I have not made that decision as of yet, but that's on the table.
Yeah, okay. Is Glenn Jacobs your mayor?
He is not. He is the mayor of Knox County. I live in Wrong County, but I'm very well aware of him, and I have a very good friend who knows him personally.
Ah, very nice, very nice. All right, but so back to what you were saying about the COVID lockdowns. So if you're 18 now, so you would have been, would you have been 15 when this thing all got started, or 16, something like that?
Let's see, it started in March of 2020, right?
20, and here we are almost March of 2023.
Yeah, so my birthday is May 10th. So yes, I would have been 15 years old at the start of the COVID.
Holy cow. So, all right. So what shocked me in not a good way was how passive most people that age were. I thought at the very least,
absolutely,
the younger people would rebel against this. You know, mm-hmm. we haven't been on this earth that long, but we've been on it long enough to know this ain't normal. And
exactly.
By and large, they just sat by and said, oh yeah, you want to take away all these precious memories I'll never get back? Sure, go ahead and do it. And it doesn't seem to do any good anyway. Well, I'll just trust the science, quote unquote. That's got to be disappointing.
Absolutely, it's disappointing because, I mean, young people are supposed to have that rebellious streak, right? But it just
seems like it's a conformity streak now. It's a conformity
exactly.
streak.
It's more of a conformity streak at this point. Instead of question authority, it's bow to authority at all costs.
Now, as a homeschooled student, mm-hmm. you get told that you won't know how to socialize and all this, but we all know that's not true. But at the same time, you probably would see on a daily basis fewer people in your age group than you would, let's say, if you went to a traditional school.
I don't know
what opportunity, you know, I mean, maybe you have other outside interests that do get you into the circles of kids your age. But I guess I'm curious about if you talk to people roughly your age about issues like this, and if so, what parts of libertarianism seem to resonate the best and which ones just don't seem to click with them at all?
I talk to young people about libertarianism all the time. And, you know, freedom and liberty is a pretty popular message, actually. I find that younger people are maybe more receptive to libertarian thought than older people. But it's mostly this perception that you have to be socially left-leaning and, you know, socially liberal, we'll say, to be a libertarian. That seems to be what young people tend to like about it. They're not so much all about the free market capitalism, voluntary interaction aspect of it, but they like the idea of being able to do whatever the heck they want. That seems to be the area that resonates the most. And if that's what draws them in, that's fine. But there needs to be an understanding there that that is not all that libertarianism entails. And that's certainly not all that voluntarism entails.
Yeah, not to mention, just because we don't want people put in cages by the political class for doing X or Y doesn't mean X or Y is noble or should be encouraged.
Exactly.
Which for some reason, there are people, I think, who are drawn to libertarianism for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
They get stuck there. It's just anything that's peaceful. Well, you know, there are a lot mm-hmm. of real crappy things you can do that are peaceful, quote unquote. So it's like people who say, well, this thing I'm doing doesn't violate the non-aggression principle. The non-aggression principle basically says, don't go up to strangers and punch them in the face. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to congratulate you that you've lived up to that very, very easily lived up to principle. You know, there mm-hmm. should be greater ambitions in your life. Now, you seem to be, just based on what I have seen, you seem to be aware that the libertarian world is rather split these days, and there are various wings to it. So how did you figure that out, and how did you situate yourself among them?
I read Rothbard.
Yeah, all right, there you go. That was my other question. What were you reading? And by the way, how does somebody stumble on Rothbard without Ron Paul? I mean, I know you say that, you know, the you were eight, but when you were eight, you didn't read Rothbard, presumably.
No, of course not.
So how did this come onto your radar, first of all?
So when I got interested in libertarianism again, after I got older, I went back and I listened to the speeches that Ron Paul had given in 2012 when I was too young to listen or care even. And one of the things that Ron Paul would talk about is Rothbard. And he would talk about Mises. And I was like, oh, who are these people? Let me look this up. Let me see if I can't get a hold of some of this literature. And
that alone goes to show you belong in this nerdy movement, you know, because most people hear stuff like that and they say, I never heard of those people. I think I'll go have some lasagna. You know, and that's
exactly.
You know, like, whereas you say, I never heard of those people. I better look them up and read what they wrote. Yes, that's what we need. We need you. All right, go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah. So I read Anatomy of the State, number one, and it's just like light bulb clicks on, right? When you read Anatomy of the State.
Yeah.
I read Liberty and Property by Mises. I read The Law. I read multiple books from that sphere of things. And I was just like, hey, you know, I kind of agree with this. And I would just get more and more books and read more and more and more. And I just started to accumulate more knowledge. And I thought, you know, maybe this whole government needs to protect us from ourselves thing that conservatism tends to stress is not the right way to go. Maybe people should be free to do things that other people disagree with. Maybe you don't need a heavy-handed entity holding your hand throughout your everyday life and treating you like a child rather than a thinking adult.
What would you like to see the libertarian world do better than it's doing now?
Messaging.
All right. Talk to me. How so?
Okay, libertarianism, I'll put it this way. Libertarianism is a great product. Voluntarism is a great product. But if you have a great product and you don't have good salesmanship, you're not going to get very far. And I think we have some great salesmen in the libertarian movement, but we need more of them. And you're one of those great salesmen in the libertarian movement, obviously.
Thank you.
Ron Paul, obviously, and Dave Smith and other people in the libertarian movement are great salesmen. But I think a lot of conservatives tend to be turned off because they completely misunderstand the social aspect of libertarianism. And a lot of the more moderate people get turned off because if you're an anarcho-capitalist, you're supposed to be some kind of coup, right? So I think libertarians and voluntarists need to do better at breaking that disconnect and talking about what libertarianism and voluntarism is actually about. And people need to be able, if you're going to critique libertarianism and you're going to critique voluntarism, you need to be critiquing the actual ideology and not a caricature.
Well, you say you need to, but they don't feel like they need to. You know what
exactly.
I mean? We are very different in that way, in that I would dare say that you and I know very well what people who criticize us believe. We could express it fairly convincingly. If we had a gun to our heads, we could probably do that. But if these people's lives depended on it, they couldn't even be bothered to figure out where we stand. What I encounter constantly is caricatures of what I believe.
Yes.
Every time I turn around, it's a caricature.
If you believe in free market capitalism, you believe that greed is a virtue, which in some instances it kind of is, but that's a topic for another day.
Yeah, but our point is that you're not going to deprogram human beings not to be, to some degree, avaricious. So therefore, you have to take the raw material you have and channel it in ways that these antisocial elements get channeled into socially beneficial channels. I mean, that's what we're trying to do here.
You take greed, something that is, I believe, a natural human emotion. You take greed and you essentially turn it around to benefit society rather than make society worse. You benefit society through innovation. If you have two greedy companies that are both competing with one another to create a cure for cancer, that's a good thing because you're going to get a cure for cancer quicker. And of course, they're going to get the profits. But if they create a cure for cancer, shouldn't they be rewarded? A socialist would tell you no.
All right. So you're talking about messaging. I feel like some of the messaging from, let's say, 2007 rings a little hollow in 2022. So
it is true.
So for instance, the kind of messaging we used to have was, look, corporations, you don't have to worry about them because they have to compete in the free market and they are about competing for your dollar by offering you the best quality product.
Exactly.
And if the Apple Corporation calls you on the phone, you don't break out into a cold sweat the way you do if the IRS calls you on the phone. Okay, fair enough.
That's still true to some extent.
Oh,
but here's the difference. The difference is that you have this marriage between the corporate world and the state. So essentially, when you're dealing with the corporate world, when you're dealing with censorship on social media platforms, if a social media platform wants to censor certain content, that is absolutely their right. If a social media platform is going to do the whims of government, that gets outside of the freedom to regulate content aspect and into the in bed with government aspect.
Right. But these days, you know, people are dealing with a lot of private companies that do seem to be pretty much everything that we've been told they were by critics of the market, that they're arbitrary, that there are arbitrary conditions of employment suddenly imposed on people. And so for us to have this Pollyanna view that, well, we just need the free market and companies will do the right thing, I don't know that that rings as true, even to true believers anymore. I don't think that rings so true to conservatives who for years and years said they believed in the free market. I think they look at, yeah, sure, they still don't care for the federal government, but then they look at the private sector, especially some of the larger firms, and they say, I'm not sure these are my friend either. They spend all their time lecturing me on wokeism or urging me to get some shot. So the messaging has got to somehow incorporate that.
Yes, the messaging absolutely has to incorporate that. I mean, you have to remember, there's a very simple answer here. Corporations are government-created entities. When a business becomes powerful enough, it will be granted corporate status by the government. Without the government, there's no corporate status. So, I mean, I believe that the bigger the government, the bigger the corporation. So that just ties into the libertarian and voluntarist message that the government is too big. The government is granting too many special favors to corporations, to big businesses, and big government breeds big business that tends to gain monopolistic power. And I don't believe that they could gain monopolistic power without that government nudge.
Hey, folks, it's time to take just a minute for Woods to improve your life yet again. Have you lost count by now? For 3 years, I have been a happy customer of Happily Date Boxes. Every month, you get a box in the mail with a different theme for a date that you can enjoy in the comfort of your own home. And it gives you an opportunity to spend quality time with your significant other, even with your busy schedule. Just within the past week, my wife and I enjoyed the most recent of these, and this one had a morning theme, so it came with coffee. It came with the ingredients to make crepes, which we did together. As always, it comes with a curated custom date playlist, which we use on Spotify, a series of conversation starters, which we always enjoy, and then it included this time a game we played where we had to write down our answers to different questions about ourselves and then try to anticipate what the other person's answers were, which is hilarious, by the way. Then there was a bunch of other fun stuff, trivia, crossword puzzle, Mad Libs, other boxes. We've done crafts. We've done an exercise where they say you're on a desert island and here are 10 possible things that you might have in your possession. Rank them in order of how useful they would actually be to you. Very interesting and fun stuff. And if you are the one who comes up with the idea, your significant other is going to think you are absolutely amazing. And you do not have to say, Woods told me to do this. You just say, I just happen to be a really, really thoughtful person. Well, take 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. That's 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. Now, there are lots of areas of emphasis within libertarianism, of course. I mean, just as in any academic discipline, there are areas of emphasis. So we have some people who are more economists than anything else. And among the economists, we have people who focus on entrepreneurship or monetary policy or whatever, all these different things. And likewise, within the movement, we have people who focus on civil liberties, or we have historians, or we have people who, let's say, are particularly interested in the drug war. So, or they're interested in the intersection of libertarianism and X, Y, and Z. So does that describe you? And if so, what are your particular sub areas of interest, let's say?
Well, you're going to love this because I'm particularly interested in, I guess, kind of the contrast or how the two will tie into each other when it comes to libertarianism / voluntarism and Christianity. Because there are a lot of libertarians and voluntarists, for that matter, that I know who are very staunch practicing Christians, evangelical Christians, Catholics. You have a majority, I would dare say a majority of libertarians are Christian affiliated, or at least consider themselves people of faith. And there's this question, which I'm sure is a pain to bring up because it's such a hang up, right? Because I believe that libertarianism and voluntarism, voluntary interaction, treat others the way that you would want to be treated, that kind of ideology, I believe, is the most consistent in the world with the Christian worldview. But there is the issue of, in particular, people will bring up passages of scripture such as Romans 13, which I'm sure you've had this discussion slash argument slash debate 1 million times as a man of faith who has written extensively about your faith and also your libertarianism. So the perspective that you render unto Caesar, and we don't have to touch on this at any length, but the perspective that you should render to Caesar, I have kind of a different perspective on it. So I want to get your thoughts here. And if I'm wrong, shut me down. And if I'm right, tell me that I'm right. So I believe that when Jesus said that you must render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's and render unto God that which is God's, he was not saying that you should pay taxes to Caesar. I believe that there is a deeper meaning. If you render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, you will render nothing, because God, in his very nature, owns Caesar. Caesar can do nothing without God's direction. So I think whenever you say render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's and render unto God that which is God's, if you render unto God that which is God's, you would also, by extension, render Caesar. Therefore, Caesar is powerless and God is all powerful. What do you think of that?
It could be. I mean, there have been a variety of ways people have addressed this. Now, of course, Romans 13 is about let everyone be subject to the governing authorities. That's that verse. And so I've had people say, and of course, on the question of taxation, that would also bleed into this, because if the governing authorities tell you to pay X or Y, then I guess you're obligated to do that. So I did do an episode on, a whole episode on this, because that, it really does deserve it. And so it's from a while ago, though. It's episode, this is number 2267. This one was 1,500 episodes ago, number 767. So I will actually link to it on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/2267, and go from there. I mean, this might be viewed as too snarky of a reply, but there's actually something to it. Think about the war in Iraq. Like, we were righteously fighting the war in Iraq because what our governing authorities told us that we needed to pony up for that particular effort, and we have to obey them according to the superficial reading of this verse. But on the other hand, why are we allowing an aggressive war against another people who are also just following Romans 13? According to that reading, they are also following Romans 13. They're doing what Saddam Hussein tells them to do. Then I guess we're just at an impasse. I guess nobody's wrong, because everybody's following what the governing authorities are telling him. So then the Romans 13 absolutists will come back and say, well, in that case, they shouldn't be following Saddam Hussein because blah, blah. So they have, you know, they have an escape hatch for that. But if the escape hatch works for Saddam Hussein, why doesn't it work for Joe Biden? Like, why can't I say, well, okay, well, if you have some criteria by which you are exempted from following some governing authority, why does it apply only to Saddam Hussein and not to Joe Biden? I mean, Joe Biden may not be at that level, but he's done a lot of rotten things, and all U.S. presidents bomb people and so are morally corrupt. So aren't I liberated from that? So, I mean, then we just argue back and forth and we just never get anywhere. So I don't see how this is helpful.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't see how it is even helpful to discuss, but it is something that libertarians should address, I believe, because if you want to bring more Christians into the fold, you have to address those verses in particular. And I do apologize for the mix up there. I have two notes and one of them's right on top of
the other. I just wanted to just make clear that
22:15-22, not Romans 13. My apologies.
Yeah. But they're not a million miles apart from each other.
No, they are not. They both.
Yeah. And of course, I want more Christians in the movement, but I just want more people in the movement. And I'm willing to sit and talk to people, hear what their concerns are, and explain how they can be addressed here. And then also, I understand how conservatives feel about some issues. And they'll say, well, we need the state to do X and Y in order to promote a moral society. And superficially, I totally get that. But on the other hand, you look at the kind of people who currently make up and are very likely in the long haul to make up the governing authorities.
Exactly.
These are not people I would entrust with the moral well-being of my family.
I don't think they have the moral high ground. And I think, in addition, if the argument is that you must follow, this is what I hear, you must follow the governing authorities until the governing authorities do something outside the realm of morality, and then you are no longer subject to the governing authorities. If that were the case, every state, the very institution of the state, would be unfollowable based on that principle. Because every single state, every single government in history has gotten outside the realm of morality. Some more than others, but every single state has done immoral things to other people, sometimes on the other side of the globe.
Now, not to mention, I try to explain to some of these folks that if they bring up, because some conservatives will think that libertarianism is just about legalizing marijuana and prostitution, mm-hmm. and that we have, you know, we probably have one or two other things, but it's basically that. And my thinking about this is, well, first, let's talk about drugs. The issue is, if you know somebody who has a drug problem, is prison rape the best solution you can think of? Probably not. That's probably not the best solution.
Absolutely not.
So therefore, maybe there is a more humane way of dealing with that problem. That when it comes to prostitution, even Thomas Aquinas said that you can make a pretty good argument for not criminalizing it.
Yes.
And the way you look at it is not necessarily that you're obligated to go out and celebrate it as a positive good.
Yes.
Again, there's nothing in libertarianism that says you have to celebrate any particular thing that anybody mm-hmm. does. That's in order to figure out what you should celebrate and what you shouldn't, you need a supplementary philosophy to libertarianism. And you can have that on your own private time.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're a libertarian, you don't say prostitution is great or whatever. That's, you know, that's your personal opinion. That has nothing to do with our philosophy. But it does say non-aggression. And so the way you deal with this sort of issue is you say, prostitution has been called the world's oldest profession for a reason. And it hasn't been suppressed since the beginning of time. So the best you can hope for, unfortunately, some conservatives are just as universalistic as liberals. They think there's a one-size-fits-all solution, that they can eliminate an evil through government action, exactly like progressives. Mm-hmm. Whereas a libertarian, I think, has a more realistic view of good and evil and realizes that usually the best you can do is kind of fence in the various evils that human beings are subject to. And so that takes the form of maybe this kind of behavior is confined to the bad part of town, as it always has been. But you don't try to stamp it out because you're not going to succeed. As I say, with the drug war, you're certainly, obviously not going to succeed. And not to mention, there is something to be said, as controversial as this is, there's something to be said for showing mercy and grace even to people who fall morally short.
Exactly.
Do they need to have their every moral foible made into a source of public humiliation? And I'm not sure that's the best approach.
It's not. It's not. And from a Christian standpoint, it is not the best approach either. However immoral an action may be, I don't think that it should be illegal unless there's direct aggression against another person. That does not mean that I necessarily condone any action. I don't have to take a stance. Listen, I can be a libertarian and I can take moral stances. For instance, I oppose abortion. I oppose abortion. And a lot of libertarians oppose abortion, some legally, some personally. There is a difference between a personal and a legal perspective. And I think what too many conservatives do is they get the two conflated, right? They think because you think that drugs should be legal, that you want people to do drugs. No, I actually think that a culture that is healthy is very important. And I also think that a culture that fosters an atmosphere of moderation is also very important. So no, I don't believe that people should go out and smoke crack on Main Street. Do I believe that that is an act of aggression against anyone? No, not unless you're on someone's personal property. And then they can set the own rules for their own personal property. So yeah, there is a disconnect there. And I think, like I said, too many conservatives conflate the moral and the legal position. You can be a libertarian, a staunch voluntarist libertarian, and a Christian who is very well committed to their faith, a practicing evangelical Christian at the same time, and there is zero inconsistency there.
Yeah, I guess these days, though, some of this rhetoric from my youth is starting to ring hollow as I observe the world that my kids are growing up into. I mean, mm-hmm. if I go to some parts of Los Angeles at night, yeah, there are people who, quote, are not violating the non-aggression principle. They're just mm-hmm. wandering around menacingly and aimlessly and in some other mental universe. And we get libertarians suggesting, oh, well, I wrote a policy paper about how to fix this. I think it's unfixable. I think we have a gigantic number of people who are just gone. Their souls are empty. I don't know what to do about it. And I don't think that fixing housing policy, I think that's really naive. I think we have to admit some things just don't have political solutions.
Yeah, some things do not have political solutions. And drugs, the drug issue is one of them. Conservatives like to say that drugs should be illegal because people are trying to escape from reality and it's unnatural, right? It's outside of the natural order to escape to some other, I don't know, parallel universe for a few hours because you're so high that you're out of your mind, right? Well, I think instead of asking the question that, or instead of saying that people are trying to escape reality, isn't it time to take a step back as a nation and look in the mirror and ask ourselves, what about our culture? What about our country? What about our nation is making people want to escape? Don't we need to take a step back, take a look in the mirror? And don't we need to ask that question? That's the question I want to see asked. What about the culture needs to change so that healthy, vibrant young people don't feel the need to light up a crack pipe and escape reality for a few hours? That's the question that needs to be asked.
Yeah, and as I say, we have to be prepared for the fact that the answer might not be easily gotten.
It is not. It is not an easy answer, and it's not a political answer.
Or we may even have the answer as to what's making them do it, but it might be much, much harder to figure out what's making them what might make them stop. But the solution of just mass incarceration doesn't seem to be
doing a whole lot. It's a non-solution. Government cannot even keep drugs out of the prisons. And if there's a war on drugs, I mean, I would just say that drugs have already won that war. That war has been over a long time ago. Because overdose deaths are through the roofs. They can't keep drugs out of prisons. There are literal drug rings operating inside prisons where people are in prison for drug offenses. I mean, if that doesn't just say the war on drugs is being won, I don't know what does.
Yeah. Yeah. By the drugs, that is to say.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So as we wrap up, give us some final words or anything else, anything you've been working on or that's interesting to you these days, or just anything more about Ezra Weirich.
You know, I have a few interests. Right now, mostly what I do is work on this newsletter for the Liberty Youth Coalition.
Do you want to give a website for that?
Yes, I would, actually. You can go to www.libertylyceum.com. That is the website for the time being. We are launching a new website. We hope to have that up either this month or next month.
Well, I missed it the first time. Tell me again slower. It's Liberty
it
what?
It is www.libertylyceum.com. Lyceum.com. That's LibertyLyceum.com.
Got it. All right, good. So I'll link to that also, of course.
Fantastic. And if you would also like to donate to the organization, help get it off its feet, because we have, or help get it on its feet, I should say, we have a up-and-coming organization here that is really starting to take off, and we need more people involved, and we need all the funds that we can get. So if you want to go to www.givesendgo.com/SparkLiberty and shoot us a donation, it would be very much appreciated.
All right. I'm writing this down. I'll also put this on the show notes page. So links to what Ezra's talking about can be found at tomwoods.com/2267. Well, whatever your future may hold, Ezra, I hope it is filled with happiness and success. And thank you very much for the conversation today.
Thank you very much for having me on. It has been an absolute honor.
All right, folks, before we wrap up, I have something to tell you that is very exciting. You will perhaps recall a number of episodes ago, I had on a gentleman who represents a series of filmmakers who are making a docuseries about the effects of the COVID lockdowns on society. And of course, they're doing this anonymously because they don't want their careers destroyed. But these are filmmakers who have worked on films you have seen or heard of. I can assure you of that. And the project is nearing completion to the point where they're ready to premiere the first of what will be 5 episodes. And they're going to premiere it in Orlando, which is right near where I live, so that I can host the evening. And it's coming up February 22nd in Orlando at a theater, like a real live theater. Haven't decided on the exact location just yet, but they're on the verge of doing it. And you can still register to attend. It doesn't cost anything to attend. But we strongly prefer that you get tickets anyway to help them plan in terms of the numbers. So the link to get those tickets and to get the details about the event is tomwoods.com slash documentary, tomwoods.com/documentary. I am happy to add to this, by the way, that another Tom Woods Show guest, Clifton Duncan, will also be there and be part of this premiere. Clifton Duncan, you will recall, perhaps from episode 2001 of the show, is that Broadway actor who sacrificed everything rather than consent to the shots against his will. And it's unbelievable the sacrifice he made. And he is such an admirable guy. And I've never had a chance to meet him in person. I've seen him perform without realizing that someday our paths would cross, but I've never actually met him in person. So that'll be another great aspect of this event. So if you're anywhere in the area at all, I hope you'll make an effort to attend. These filmmakers have been working for us in obscurity to get this project finished. And I hope we can honor them by showing up. And you'll have a wonderful evening. It's a wonderful evening out. Get a chance to meet Clifton Duncan. Say hello to me. So again, the link is tomwoods.com/documentary. If you live in Florida, particularly in the Central Florida area, please forward that link to friends. If you are involved in any Florida-related group, Liberty sort of group or anything like that, if you wouldn't mind sharing the link with those people, let's make this a big, big event. So again, tomwoods.com/documentary. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.